Welcome to Pause to Go, the podcast that's all about making the most of life's transitions from middle school through menopause. I'm your host, Bree Luck, joining you as we embark on a journey of self-discovery and questionable decisions. Get ready for heartfelt conversations, expert insights, and personal stories that'll have you laughing, crying, and saying, "Thank goodness I'm not alone." If you've lost your midlife crisis survival kit, we've got you covered. So join me, won't you? And together we can pause to go. Welcome back to another episode of Pause to Go. I have a fabulous interview that I'm really looking forward to sharing with you today. But before we get into this interview with artist and podcaster Zaya B, I wanted to talk about a current topic in women's health, which is the recent news about the potential relationship between Alzheimer's disease and menopause. And the harsh reality is that women bear a disproportionate burden of this disease. Two-thirds of people diagnosed with Alzheimer's are women. But why? And more importantly, can we do something about it? So recent research suggests that there might be a promising link between estrogen therapy and Alzheimer's prevention. But I wanted to take a few moments before this interview to unpack this. I'd like to start by understanding what we are up against. Alzheimer's is a type of dementia, and that is a term for conditions causing significant decline in mental ability. Specifically, it attacks the brain. Remember, I'm not a doctor, but from what I understand, protein clumps called plaques and twisted fibers called tangles damage healthy brain cells, causing them to wither and die. And this disrupts communication between and among neurons, which are like the brain's messengers. As the damage in the brain spreads, symptoms worsen. Memory loss, confusion, difficulty with words or tasks, even personality changes. It's a devastating progression. And sadly, women are on the front lines of this fight. It's not fully clear why, but a mix of factors are likely at play. Women tend to live longer, increasing their overall risk. There might be some subtle genetic differences affecting how our brains respond to aging processes. And then there's the element of hormones, specifically estrogen, which I'm going to dive in a little bit today. So estrogen is a powerhouse hormone. It regulates our reproductive system, yes, but as we know, it also influences bone health, cardiovascular function, and significantly, our brain. Estrogen supports neurons, their connections, and blood flow. The problem is after menopause, estrogen levels take a nosedive. So could this be a factor in increased Alzheimer's risk in women? Well, a recent study published by Weill Cornell Medicine sought to answer this question. They analyzed vast amounts of data comparing women who received estrogen therapy during menopausal transition to those who didn't. And the findings were that women who had estrogen therapy in midlife seemed less likely to develop dementia later on. Now, let's be clear. This doesn't mean estrogen is a magic bullet. Critically, the benefits seem tied to starting therapy around the onset of menopause, not years afterwards. It's also thought that estrogen offers a protective window in those early menopausal years, potentially shielding the brain from some of the negative changes starting to occur. It's important to note, very important to note, that this is still an evolving area of research. Estrogen therapy is not a one-size-fits-all solution, and it comes with its own risks. That's why discussing it with your doctor is absolutely essential. So a lot of people have been emailing me since these studies have been in the news recently. By the way, I'm going to reference the article about this in the show notes. And there's a great book that just came out recently. It's called The Menopause Brain. It's by Dr. Lisa Moscone. There's hope. All right. We don't have to be terrified by this potential. There are steps that we can take, both medical steps and also lifestyle steps, to help to protect our brains throughout this time. And Dr. Moscone talks about that. There's a link to the book in the show notes. This book does a great job of breaking down the science that we know right now in a clear and accessible way. Now, full disclosure, there is a section on the book on diet and nutrition that uses some language that made me raise an eyebrow. Let's just say flashback to the supermodel diets of the 90s surface for a hot moment. We can all move on from those, right? But overall, I found the book informative and comforting, and it really emphasizes the positive steps that you can take to keep your brain sharp throughout and beyond perimenopause and menopause. Now, interestingly enough, I interviewed today's guest, Zaya B., before Dr. Moscone's book even came out. But menopause and brain fog do come up in our conversation. Zaya is delightful. She is an artist, a podcast host, and a total inspiration. And she's all about helping women live their hell yes lives, which includes embracing change and stepping into your power at any stage of life. I so look forward to you hearing Zaya B's insights and experiences. So let's jump right in. Hi, Zaya. How are you?
I'm good. I'm thrilled to be here.
I'm happy to have you here. I'm really excited because one of the things that we like to talk about on the podcast are transformations that people have made in midlife. We often have such a negative connotation with aging and midlife and perimenopause and menopause and midlife crises and all of that, that it's really helpful to hear inspirational stories, stories where people feel like there's been a positive transformation in midlife. I think about those 40 under 40 lists, and there's been a meme going around that's like, we need a 50 over 50 list. And so I am just delighted to talk to you because you have made a major transformation in midlife.
I have.
My first question is, how old are you now? And where are you in your perimenopausal or menopausal journey? Because most of the people who are listening are really interested in that aspect as well.
I'm in my early 50s. I don't share actual numbers for protection purposes. I'm a little private about things like that. And I am full on menopause since I was 47. So it's been several years.
Yeah. What was menopause like for you?
Not a joy. Lots of night sweats and what's the other word I'm looking for? See, and brain fog. So we can relate to the brain fog. The other sweating, the hot flash. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah, yeah. Lots of water coming out at times that I didn't want water coming out.
Fleshing, blushing.
And the brain fog.
You know, I think that the brain fog is probably the most underrepresented side effect of perimenopause. And a lot of us feel like we're going crazy with the brain fog. That's something that I hear a lot. And now that you're a few years into menopause, have you found that some of the symptoms have subsided for you?
Yes, luckily. The brain, I will say, honestly, I think is getting worse. And I'm obviously aware. It's not like I have dementia. And I miss my brain. I miss being witty and sharp and having a memory. But the sweating has gotten much better. I mean, it used to be embarrassing where I don't need random people to know what's going on with my hormones. And I would go on a date and it's a cold winter day and I'd be sweating. Or I'm at a meeting, you know, the temperature is perfectly comfortable and I'm sweating. So luckily that has, for the most part, gone away. I may get a tiny bead of sweat here and there, but not just pouring off of my face. And same thing with the night sweats. I get warm at night, but I used to have to get up out of bed, change my clothes, change my sheets because it was just drenched.
So for people who are in the throes of hot flashes and night sweats, here's a little story of hope for you. It will pass. For brain fog, we may have to look to other skills. And that's what you have done.
And maybe other people don't get this. I don't know.
It's a pretty common side effect. It is. But you have made this huge transformation. Can you tell us about what that journey has been like? Where were you before you decided to completely change up your life?
So I was in consulting for 25 years. 10 years, I had my own company. I was working with Fortune 500 companies and international work as well. And as much as I enjoyed the work, I liked the challenge, I appreciated helping my clients, and I was making a good living, I had flexibility to travel all the time, things were okay. But for 20 of the 25 years, I had this deep inner gnawing of, I want to do more meaningful work. You know, helping a large company to handle putting in a new system or a new process. At the end of the day, deep in my soul, I don't care. And I knew that I was here for something more meaningful.
How did you know?
It was just this deep feeling. You know, I mean, I talk a lot, my big thing now is connecting with your intuition. And it's just, we have this knowledge and this wisdom within if we get quiet. And often we don't even have to get quiet. Often it'll wake you up, or at least wakes me up in the middle of the night, you know, knocking on my brain of, hello, are you listening to me? So I knew, I just could feel that this is not why I'm here and this is not what I'm meant to be doing. But until I had an answer, I just kept on trucking, you know, you have to pay your bills.
So you were getting those feelings, those intuitive hits along the way. What did that look like for you?
I mean, I had a few escape routes. So when I was 30, I actually took 8 months off to travel around the world. I was consulting down in Australia and the project ended and I didn't want to go back to the US and I didn't want to go back to work. And so I thought, peace out, I'm going to go explore and figure out my life. And then while I was traveling, I got laid off. So I traveled for a year around the world and I swore I was going to figure it out and I was going to start some new path. And I didn't, unfortunately. So I moved to San Francisco and I did at least shift. I was working for a large firm before and then I shifted and I was given the opportunity to be a contractor or, you know, work for myself, which is now very common. Back then it was unheard of and it was even more money with more flexibility. So that was wonderful. And then I just threw myself into other things, honestly. You know, obviously I worked very hard and I dedicated myself to work, but then outside of it, I got into cycling and I got into triathlon and I got into rock climbing and sailing and kayaking and all kinds of other things to just add some extra joy. It wasn't the meaning that I was looking for, but it made my life feel more well-rounded than just doing a job that I didn't love and then feeling empty.
It's so interesting that you say that because I'm guessing that a lot of your work as you were a contract employee was sitting in front of a desk at a computer. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yep.
That you went for these other activities that required a lot of movement and physical movement. It's also visual movement, moving out of that static space into a real flow state physically, literally, when you are cycling or climbing or, you know, doing all different types of physical activities.
Yeah, I never really thought about it that way, but you're right. It was more of an embodied expression, you know, where so many of us are stuck in this one solid position, just using our fingers all day and our eyes, and that's it. And the rest of our body is just told to sit still. And that's not natural. So I never really put it together until you said it. But yeah, all of these activities were very expressive. I didn't take up writing or anything like that. They were really big movements that had to happen.
So you started incorporating more joyful movement into your life, but you weren't feeling a sense of purpose yet. So then what happened? What awakened that sense of purpose?
I mean, it took a while. I will say it's been a journey. At 40, I tried to jump out cold turkey. I left consulting. I said, that's it. I'm not doing this. And I started a photography business. I've been into photography since I was a child. So art photography. And then I also created jewelry from the art photography. And unfortunately, I didn't really know anything about retail. And you know, just I had too much riding on it because I, again, still need to pay my bills. And you have to sell a lot of jewelry to pay bills in San Francisco. And so I just kept working harder and harder and harder. And the stress of it all, I ended up with Bell's palsy, which is where half your face becomes paralyzed. And at the same time, I'd broken a toe. I was a mess. And I thought, hold on. This is not worth it.
Hold on. You had Bell's palsy and you had broken a toe?
Oh, and I, within 1 week, on a Thursday night, I broke my toe, which I didn't know at the time, but I had actually crushed it, basically. On the Friday, the man I was in a relationship with and I had ended things. And then on Saturday, I got Bell's palsy. So it was a great week.
That was definitely a sign.
What it meant is that I went back to consulting because I thought I can take on an easy consulting project with pretty much minimal stress. I mean, I know what I'm doing. I can handle things. And so it's an easier way to make money than to start something new. So I limped back literally and figuratively into my old career for another 10 years.
And then after 10 years, something else shifted?
Yeah. So I started my own business at that point where I had people working for me as well. And then my main client here at that point was the local electric company. And anyone in the U.S. probably heard about the massive wildfires in California. Well, my client was the one that was found guilty, felony charges of starting those fires. And so they were declaring bankruptcy. And not just that, but you know, the reason that they were declaring bankruptcy and the way they treated the women that worked for me at the time, I thought, I can't do this anymore. I mean, I'm so out of integrity at this point. I know that there's something bigger for me. My client is not working with integrity. They're not treating the community well, nature well, my team well. I can't do it. And so I started looking for other clients and starting over because they had been my really big client for a while. And then I had to pause and think, am I building a consulting firm because I love consulting, or am I building a consulting firm because it's what I know to do? And it really was the second option. And I spoke to a financial planner and he said, okay, well, how much money do you think you really need on a monthly basis? I now know that I probably underestimated. But at the time I shared a number and he said, okay, you're good. You're done. And so I semi-retired at that point.
An approximate age?
49.
49. So not long ago, and you were still in the thick of early menopause stages there. So, wow, that's big.
Yeah, there's been a lot of change these last few years, I will say, but in a great way. I mean, yeah, the sweating and stuff wasn't comfortable and, you know, the brain fog, and there are other things going on that maybe I don't need to discuss on the screen, but people can imagine other things that happen to your body and
the we nether talk about
regions
them a lot.
As you go through menopause. Yeah. So, yeah, the thinning hair, if anyone's going to see me, I used to have a nice big mane of hair. But yeah, so in 2019, I basically sat around. I always thought I wanted to get to early retirement. And then I got there and I thought, well, people my age aren't around. This is actually quite boring. I've already done a ton of travel. I don't want to always just be on the road. So it surprised me, not just that I wasn't enjoying it, but then letting go of it actually was a process as well. And I went to throw out some old consulting papers one day and I had this voice inside of me say, like, what do you think you're doing? I worked really hard for this stuff. You're not throwing this away. And so that was even a process of over months getting it closer to the front door and then actually letting them go through a ritual and really releasing that whole identity of being a consultant was a process, which, you know, ironically, the consulting I did was change management. I helped people with large scale change. So you would think that I would have expected that change would maybe have some challenge, but you know, we teach what we need to learn, right?
That's right. So once you let go of the consulting and once you really finally let it go, what did that open up room for?
I'll say possibility. I still didn't have an answer, but there was an openness. And so 2020, I actually got a one-way ticket to Mexico. I was going to travel around the world and I was going to find my peas. I'm single, so I was going to find my person. I have wanted to leave San Francisco. I was going to find my place and I was going to find my purpose. You know, no pressure for one trip to figure everything out. And I got to Mexico and I was in a lovely small town and then COVID hit. So I stayed there for 2 months actually, because it was much nicer down there than what was happening in the U.S. But I saw every country closing their borders. And I thought, well, this, you know, even if I travel, it's not going to be fun. There's a chance that you'll get locked inside in a country like Peru, just, you know, had people trapped inside for months. And so I eventually gave up and came home. And it was through actually the darkness of COVID that things really started to shift. So, you know, as much as I was seeking actively, it was when I wasn't really looking that things started to unfold for me, actually.
That tendency to want to seek, especially for people who are seekers, to want to travel, to move, to pick up and travel around the world or move to a new country. I've certainly been there. I mean, last night I went to a party and somebody said, "Are you still moving?" Because for the last 3 years, my husband and I have been saying, "We're going to move, we're going to move, we're going to move." And I realized, oh, we're probably not going to move. Like, I think I needed to feel the possibility that we could, to allow myself the space to dream again. I felt hemmed in by a place. But similarly, when you can stay in that place and find possibility and not expend all of that energy picking up, moving, finding a new crowd, finding a new grocery store, finding a new doctor, when you're not trying to completely change up everything, it allows you to make those internal changes. What a discovery to make, although I'm sorry about the way that happened in COVID, but that may have been one of the subtle blessings of that time.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way. I don't know if people are going to be able to see this, but the painting behind me is actually a painting that I created because I changed my name this year as well. I changed it 3 years ago. I changed it at the beginning of that trip, but I finally announced it to everyone this year. As much as it was a challenging time, I do feel like it worked out exactly as it was supposed to, because I really don't think I would ever find painting. I don't know that the podcast that I started would have unfolded the way it did. I mean, I think things happen the way they're supposed to happen. Whether we like it or not, I'm not going to sit here and question that, you know, it shouldn't have happened and I should have been on my trip, because then I would have missed out on this. Who knows what I would have experienced, but I would have missed out on what I experienced during COVID.
So you were in Mexico and then you went back to San Francisco. Is that right? And is that when you discovered painting?
It is. Yeah. I mean, I'm single. I live alone. I'm not working, so I'm not even on Zoom. I was back home. It was just a miserable time. I mean, I think most people probably had this experience, although different challenges. People that are locked in with their family had challenges of everyone getting along. And then those of us that were single, you know, it was just intense loneliness. And then in California, we also had wildfire smoke at one point later during lockdowns. So we couldn't be inside, we couldn't be outside. And it just was, I want to say infuriating. I guess infuriating, sad, you know, every kind of dark emotion was swirling at once. During that lockdown, I actually bought myself an inflatable kayak and I started kayaking. This is before the wildfires. I went camping and I would, you know, just find a lake, and it actually was beautiful. And I was really enjoying that. I spent several weeks camping, getting connected to nature. And then I didn't really care if I was alone, because I enjoy travel and camping on my own. Being stuck at home felt different to me. And so then when the fires happened and the wildfire smoke made things bad, and they actually officially closed forests, you know, I didn't think you could do that, but they closed the forests in California. So I had to come home. And I just started taking a lot of classes. So I took poetry class and I took a singing class and just tons. There's an organization called Creative Mornings, which saved me. They had these field trips with tons of different classes.
I'll link Creative Mornings in the show notes because it is a great resource.
So I took classes and then I got an email invitation to a painting class called Legend. And it was about painting your legendary self. And I somehow got on this artist's email list 10 years before. I have no idea how. I was not an artist. And it just struck me, because it was not a how-to paint, but this whole thing of we're trapped inside, we're exploring all of our shadows and everything that's coming up because we are trapped inside with ourselves, or at least this is what was happening for me. Let me lean into this and see what I can learn. And so I was nervous. I looked at her Facebook page and I saw these magnificent paintings. I haven't painted since I'm in elementary school. You know, who am I to try and paint? But I was curious. And so I signed up. And it was interesting. If you look at my painting at the beginning, it looks like where I left off. It looks like a 10-year-old painted it. And by the end, friends of mine call it a masterpiece. I mean, it's still to this day, the best painting that I created, I think, is that first one. It was magical. And all of a sudden, this world opened of like, ooh, painting. I'm really visual. I am creative. And to have this other outlet has been really magical. The idea of just flinging paint around. I don't do realistic work. I play and experiment. And it's just a fun outlet.
So you really dove into creating abstract art then?
That first piece was, it wasn't realistic. It was, I'm not sure exactly what the word would be right now, but you know, it looked like a woman, a mystical woman with different animals and different things around it. So it's not something that you would actually see, but it was a, you can look at it and say that's a woman. And then over the years, a friend of mine introduced me to this other painting method where you literally are pouring paint on the canvas, and that just felt really freeing. And I was like, ooh, this is fun. And then I did an intuitive painting experience where you just, you know, grab a brush, grab paint, and you just really express whatever you want to do. So I had at one point 9 pages of green, you know, not looking to make a pretty picture, but for some reason I needed to paint 9 pictures of green, just green. And through that and experiencing the joy of being looser and more playful, that felt more authentic to who I am. When I have to take a tiny brush and start doing details, that feels more like work to me than really just big expressive movements.
It's fascinating because we started by talking about your need to get outside and move. And now even your painting, you're talking about big expressive movements and not the finite little detail-oriented typing, the more stationary aspects of creating, right? It's so fascinating. Flow definitely seems to be a core value in your life, or at least a recurring theme in your life.
And movement. And to be honest, I hadn't really thought about it again until you pointed this out that, yeah, you know, I think I sometimes joke that I'm an overgrown 5-year-old and I want to just play a lot. And so sitting down and carefully creating doesn't feel as playful as like, let me just drop this blue paint on here and fling this here and see what happens and just making an experiment.
Nice. So you started painting, your work evolved, and then what happened? Because now you call yourself an artist.
I do. I think we're all artists, honestly, and we just forget about it. Think about every child. I mean, have you ever met any child that you hand them a crayon or a marker or paint and they say, nope, I don't like that? At some point, somebody is going to be creating. And we're told that we're not good and we're not talented and we should stop it or things like that. And we forget that we're all artists and we're all creators. But yeah, so 2021, I was just playing with it. I was, you know, doing a little bit. I am a pretty slow artist because I'm still learning and it's something that I'm coming into. And 2022 also, I did some, but since I was still thinking about moving, I spent a lot of time exploring different areas to move. And so painting was there, but still a little bit background. But I was painting bigger and bigger and messier and messier. I already had destroyed my rug and I was about to destroy my curtains. And so I actually, at the beginning of this year, got a studio, a large studio in downtown San Francisco. And I've had an open studio. I'm about to get ready for a second show. So I am indeed an artist and I am owning that now.
I love that. Was there a moment, and maybe there wasn't, but I'm curious to know if there was a moment when you suddenly said, just like when you announced that you were changing your name, when you suddenly felt compelled to embrace the public identity of artists instead of having it just be a private identity?
Yeah, it was interesting. I adore nature and birds in particular are animals that I'm really drawn to. And so I posted on Facebook, I forgot exactly what I said, but pretty much it was, I'm an artist now. And with that, a falcon landed on my balcony. Now I am in San Francisco, in the city. I'm not out in some country. And right on the corner of my balcony. And I thought, woo, okay, that means something. And then a few weeks later, I announced something else. I think I shared a piece or I announced that I had a studio and a hawk went flying by. So these felt like magical symbols from the universe that something was right and I was taking flight into a new experience. But yeah, these big moments are a combination of excitement of what's coming and stepping into something new and a little nerve-wracking. I'm like, am I really committing to this name? Am I really committing to an artist? But stepping out and saying it makes it that much easier. Because once it's out there, it's like, phew, okay, I don't have to hold the secret anymore. And now I can actually live this way.
Did you feel some other expectations slip away once you did make that announcement? What shifted?
It was expectations. I feel like it was actually forward momentum because it was a claiming of this is who I am. And maybe it's not forever. Who knows? I mean, I change things a lot. Maybe I won't be a painter forever, but for now, this is an important part of who I am and what I do. So it was more of a, what shifted was a stepping into. And this is who I am. This is what I do. And normally I don't connect who I am with what I do if it's like a job, but painting, since it's such a personal thing for me, I'm not painting a picture of, you know, again, a sunset or something. It's an energetic or emotional expression of what's going on in me. So when I say my painting is who I am, it's because my paintings are part of who I am.
I also really love that claiming the identity allowed you to move forward less encumbered, that it sort of opened it up. This is the next thing. And it makes me think of, I have some resistance to manifestation talk. Like I have resistance to it. It's my own stuff, but I don't always have resistance to it. And one of the things that I love is the idea of naming where you are going, naming who you are, claiming. I love that you use the word claiming because it's really owning it, right? It's like, this is mine. And as a woman who has given, I think this is a big part of middle age too. We serve so much in life that the moment of middle age is often accompanied by saying, oh, wait, no, I'm going to receive, I'm going to claim, I'm going to move forward solidly from this place. And it sounds like you just did that so fully. And then to have the bird of prey swooping down and confirming that for you. How beautiful. What a beautiful story.
Thank you.
I love this idea of you saying that this is who you are now, that it doesn't have to be for forever either, because I think sometimes that holds people back from claiming something because they feel like, oh, if I'm claiming this identity or this next step, it has to be a forever move. So that you are saying, oh, this is who I am now and I'm fully this right now is really beautiful. So my next question for you is, as someone who made such a huge creative shift, what are three tips that you have for people who are interested in embracing a creative career or their creative self?
I love this question because I think everybody is creative, whether they turn it into a creative career or not, you know, is obviously up to them. But I think there's a lot of benefit to all of us being more creative. So the first one I would say is, and a lot of this comes back to embrace who you were when you were five, because there was a lot of wisdom in acting like a child. I mean, I don't mean immature, but the way they approach things. So the first one I would say is to play and experiment and be creative. So again, if you think about how a child will create something, they don't sit there and analyze the whole thing and they don't judge it. They grab the green marker and they color for a little while. And then maybe they grab the scissors and they cut it up and then they glue it down and they're just playing. And it's, what would happen if I do this? So I think experimenting with different ideas, because there's also a lot to it when it comes to the career. What I'm going through now is, yes, the painting is fun. The podcast is fantastic. But you know this as well. There's the social media and there's the marketing and there's all the other stuff that goes with the career that, to me at least, is not nearly as fun. And I'm working through finding ways to make them fun now. But even with those pieces, if we get this curiosity and again, embracing, whether it's you picture a dog running in a park or a child at play, it's this joyful curiosity. So I'd say starting there with, what could it be? What do I want it to be? What's possible? and doing it your way, because even that, you know, my podcast is Your Hell Yes Life, and the idea is following your yes. And so I'm working on that myself, where it's, you have to do social media and you have to do it 4 times a week and all these messages we get. And it's like, well, this is my thing. So why am I not doing it my way? So again, allow yourself to just enjoy that. And the reason I use the word play is to make it enjoyable. So it's not a, I have to do this and I have to figure it out. Because I also had that I did to myself. It was, I have to find my mission and I have to sit down, and very head focused and very stress and very masculine energy, instead of tapping into the wisdom of your body and exploration and curiosity and what if, and opening up to possibility. So that's the first one. The second one that's aligned to that then would be to connect with and follow your intuition, and then trust yourself. So we have a ton of wisdom inside of ourselves. And again, over the years, society, external voices, our own voices have taught us to question ourselves and to look for answers outside, to get on Google, to ask our friends, you know, doubt ourselves. And yet often the right answer is inside, especially if it's, should I create this career and how do I create this career? You have the answer. Somebody outside is not going to have the answer for you and for what is right for you. So whether that's getting out into nature, being quiet, doing journaling, everyone has different ways to connect with their intuition. But I'd say that's next. And then again, the trust part. So when you get these hits, to really trust that, like, okay, this actually means something. And to also make sure that it's coming from the deepest part of you. So sometimes a fearful message can feel like it's intuitive, like, oh, no, I'm not supposed to do that. I feel that there's a no. And it's like, well, is it really? Or do you just need to go a little deeper and just sit with it more to really almost question that, like, is this really a no? And just unravel things a little bit. And then the last one I would say is to take action, right? Nothing is going to happen if we don't do it. And it doesn't have to be perfect and it doesn't have to be grand. It could be, I'm going to go take a class. I'm going to go find an artist and ask them what this career is like. I'm going to go read a book about what the artist's life is like. I'm going to understand this more. But you're going to do something. And, you know, I'm not somebody that focuses on that we always have to be in action and doing and doing. But if you want to change, you can't ponder it forever. At some point, you need to just step forward, even baby steps of, I'm going to keep in that exploration curiosity, and I'm going to act in that I'm going to learn a little bit, and then I'm going to take the next step. And we all have different risk tolerance. So some people are just going to want to leap in and say I'm an artist and get the studio and start. And other people are going to take more time and they're going to explore it piece by piece while they keep the other career going. And, you know, only you know what's right for you.
You brought up something, and you may not have the answer for this. I know I don't have the answer for this, but I'm curious to have the conversation with you anyway, which is that, you know, one of the steps was really to trust yourself, to know that you, and actually many of the steps sort of come back to that, right? But to trust yourself, that you know yourself better than anybody else knows you, that you can find your own way. And then you couple that with taking action, which can involve things like seeking outside resources, right? Like taking a class or reading. And I love that. Both of those things I think are absolutely true. The tricky thing that I see with a lot of people, especially people who have been people pleasers for a long time, is that we go to take a class and we don't balance it with trusting ourselves, that we lean all into following what a teacher says or trying to take the steps that somebody else did to do something. How do you find that balance there between learning and absorbing and expanding from someone else's perspective and knowledge and expertise, and also really trusting your gut and trusting where you are and knowing, like, oh, I can learn social media strategies from this person, but I can actually, knowing this, I can also throw some of them out because they don't really align with me. How do you do that?
It's a great question. I think it comes back to the questioning and the curiosity and the tapping into your intuition of, does this feel right? Does this feel good? And questioning things. Because again, I'm not going to say I'm perfect at this. I can find myself doing things and feeling stressed about it. And then I was like, well, wait, I left the stressful career. And yes, I probably should be posting should. I hate to should myself. But, you know, I could benefit from posting more often. And yet, okay, maybe if I post less often, it'll take me longer, but it feels better. So it's questioning what you're doing. And I'll share a small story that's related to this. I went for an art critique. I was showing my paintings to a teacher. And because I'm new at abstract art, I was doing this. I was following a different artist and they would say, you know, here's how you make a good composition and here's how you handle your colors. And I thought, well, I don't know anything about abstract art. There must be something to this. Let me learn. So at their critique, she said, okay, tell me why you have this color here. And I said, well, I was told that if you introduce a color, you should have it in three places. And she said, well, who said? And then she said, tell me why you have this mark here. And it was a similar kind of, well, I learned, you know, this other thing. And again, who said? And she did this three times until, you know, mind blown. I've always been somebody that questions rules. And here I am in something that's so personal that it's my artistic expression and I am following rules. And so I actually now have a painting that's called Who Says, that's just flinging paint, pure joy. But I think it's catching ourselves with the, am I doing this because it's what feels like the right path for me? Or am I doing it because I don't know? And so therefore, this expert knows better. And yes, you know, there are social media experts that know ridiculous amounts more than me, but they're doing it their way. And so, yeah, again, it's going to take me longer and maybe is a little more frustrating because I'm not following everything you need to do for the algorithm. And at the same point, it feels easier that way than to follow this step and this step and this step. So I think it's just a balance of, yes, we need to learn from other people. We don't know everything. Yes, we have deep wisdom on what our path is, but then there's actual how-to, right? Like how to set up a reel for Instagram is not something your intuition necessarily is going to guide you to. There's steps to, here's how you create it. You hit this button and then you do this, right? So look for the guidance and then balance it back with, again, what feels right to you. But I think that's a great inquiry.
Well, thank you for your insights into that. I know it's something that I struggle with often. Sometimes I'm not even aware that I'm struggling in the moment. And then I'll go back and look at something from the past. I'll look at a piece of art or a post or something that I wrote, and it won't feel right anymore. And I'll realize, oh, I was actually trying to meet somebody else's demands or needs or follow their rules. So it's good that you're a rule breaker. That comes in handy when you're trying to completely make a huge life shift. We could all have a little more rule questioner.
Yeah, exactly. And I think just coming back to your point, I think that's a great one. Because I also, again, like I'm not going to say I'm perfect at this at all. I think it comes back to, does this feel good? If you're under stress of, I have to do it this way, then that's probably not your path. I mean, yes, initially when you're learning something new, it's more stressful and frustrating. But if for a while it's still feeling that way, either it's not your thing and you need to go outsource that work, or find a way to make it more fun and make it more casual. Like I see, let's say with the social media example, I see that there's an artist I follow and she's hugely popular, or an art coach, and she handwrites notes. And that's what, and she holds a handwritten note. And we love her because her message makes sense. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. She's doing it her way. So it's just coming back to, does it feel good? Does it feel right? And if not, what is going to feel good and right?
Well, another thing about that that I think probably relates to many aspects of really shaking up your life is that that kind of thing is replicable, right? That choice that she made to handwrite a note. We're talking about social media right now, but I think it can apply to anything from like what you wear every day. Like you think about people who wear sort of a uniform every day, so they don't have to think about that anymore. Choosing a social media strategy of handwriting notes, you know exactly what you're going to do. You don't have to come up with like, what's this hugely inventive dance that I'm going to do to go along with some kind of life inspo post that I need to make, right? And just other things like that we know that when we have some things that can be replicable that we don't have to think about every day, it opens up more possibility for us. Do you have anything like that? Anything that you sort of do in a similar way consistently?
I wish I did. It's honestly something I struggle with. I'm pretty sure I have ADHD. ADD. They haven't officially diagnosed me because the symptoms are different in women than what. Anyway, we won't get into the medical field.
Oh yeah, we're all
and yeah. That's true. When you're talking about perimenopause and menopause, you understand what it is to question the way we're treated. So it's something I really struggle with because I could really benefit from more schedule, more repetition, more routine. I know that I could benefit from that. And it's just something that I have not been able to put into place. I mean, the only thing is that I'll often go to the studio at night because my studio is in a basement. And so at night, I don't mind going. But that's about it. I mean, that's not much of a routine necessarily because I don't do it every day. So I wish I had some wisdom. But if you figure it out, let me know because I'm struggling with that one.
Well, I can say that I do have a morning routine that I do every morning. But I'm also, I don't know if you follow the Enneagram. I'm an Enneagram 4, and I'm also a people pleaser. So it's like these two things sort of fight against each other often, where I had this sort of really rebellious side, which is like, I'm going to throw everything out and start anew, right? I'm going to move to Spain. I don't speak Spanish, but I'm going, right? I definitely have that aspect of my personality. But my morning routine, when I do it, and now I do it consistently, because I know that I benefit so much from the morning routine that I now can't imagine not doing it anymore, right? And it's a very simple one. It's waking up, it's meditating, it's journaling, it's having a cup of coffee, and then it's coming up with a list for my day that includes gratitude, right? That's it.
That's a lot. I mean, that's still a lot. That was five things, I think you said in there. So
it's five things.
I do pieces. This morning I woke up and I did do the gratitude one. And some days I think about it and some days I don't. It's the sticking with it and the consistency. From an Enneagram perspective, I am an 8 with a strong 7 wing. So you can understand the 7 is like, what else do I need to be doing out there? What's fun? And I don't want to sit there and have same. So the 7, for people that don't know the Enneagram, like devour life experiences. They just want to experience everything. So the idea of routine is the antithesis of a 7.
Yeah. I hear you. Can we talk about your podcast? Can we talk a little bit about how that came up? Because it's a great podcast. When did that open up for you?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about it. I love it. It's the coolest thing I've ever done, and not like a pat me on the back kind of coolest thing. I just feel blessed to be able to do it and to meet the people that I've been meeting. I'm sure you feel the same way. So it actually fell into my head. I mean, it just feels like a download. I was taking a class earlier this year and they challenged us to get on camera just to feel comfortable on camera, right? Because so much today is about presence. And as I was talking, I said, I want to help women live their hell yes life. And I thought, ooh, what did I just say? That was something. And the next day, I just got this in one full sentence, I'm going to do a podcast to spotlight and celebrate women who are living their life their way in order to inspire and inform others. And it was like, whoa, what? Where did that just come from? I was not a podcast listener. I wasn't even thinking about it. And it just came in. And it took a few months to actually happen. But, you know, now it's happening. And I just love the mission. Again, your hell yes life goes back to some of the themes that we were talking about earlier. And it's about, especially at midlife, like we don't have time to mess around anymore. Like enough of the outside expectations, enough of what our parents think and our friends think, and maybe even what we want to judge about ourselves. It's let's just be ourselves. Let's follow our own yes. That's what it is. That's the main thing. It doesn't mean that everything is sunshine and butterflies and we love everything about our life every day. It means that we are fully standing in our powerful yes. This is who I am. This is how I am in the world. And so it's been just a magnificent ride, I will say. I mean, within a few weeks, it was in 31 countries and places that I haven't even traveled to. Like all of a sudden, there were a bunch of people in Algeria listening and I've never been to Algeria. So that's fun. And, you know, I feel like it's, for me, it's been a secret key almost. You know, if I was to call somebody and say, hey, can I have coffee with you for an hour? They would often say, who are you and why would I do that? And yet when I approach with the podcast and the mission of the podcast, almost every time it's an absolutely yes. And then I get to meet these incredible women, share their stories, and hopefully inspire other women to step up and live life their way. Because everybody that I'm interviewing is bravely living a very unique life. You know, nobody is just, and I don't want to say just, because some people are really happy in the corporate ladder. Some people need to do it for money, like I was doing it. But they're, at every choice, they're choosing what is their thing. And it can be in every part of your life. So, you know, in your relationships, in the way you treat your body, in your work, saying yes to yourself. And in order to have a strong yes, you do need to have a no. I know that one's hard for people pleasers, but you have to have boundaries and no's, or your yes is kind of meaningless because then you're saying yes to things you don't want to say yes to.
It's so true. You need a hell no and a hell yes.
Exactly.
Well, that's just wonderful. I'm delighted that you have it, and it's a lot of fun to listen to. It's on my playlist. So I know people can find you through the podcast. What are other ways that people can connect with you?
Well, as I said earlier, I'm not really good at posting, but I am starting to get better at putting my things online. So Zya, Zya.be on Instagram. And I'm combining, I had one for the podcast and the art, but I'm putting everything under Zya B now. And then I'm on Facebook as well, also Zya B. And I do have a Facebook group, Your Hell Yes Life, to bring people together who are also wanting to forge that path for themselves.
I thank you so much for encouraging people to live their hell yes life. I think that's wonderful. And thank you for sharing your story with us.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to be on. And I appreciate you being a listener. I'm a big fan of your show as well.
What an inspiring conversation. I hope you found Zya B's story as utterly empowering as I did. Before we go, I want to recap some of the key takeaways from today's episode. Creativity is for everyone. Whether it's painting, dancing, or simply playing with new ideas, embracing your creative side can be transformative during any of life's changes, but especially midlife. Trust your intuition. You know yourself better than anyone else. Learn to listen to and trust your gut. It's never too late for a fresh start, whether it's a major career change or a small shift in perspective. Don't be afraid to break free from old patterns and create the life you desire. Say yes to yourself. This means not only giving yourself permission to chase what lights you up, but also having the courage to say hell no to things that drain your time and your energy. Change is a natural part of life. Instead of resisting it, what if we see it as an opportunity for growth and exciting new possibilities? If any of these resonated with you, let me know. And to find out more about Zya B's art, her podcast, and to join the Your Hell Yes Life community, check out the show notes to get in touch with Zya B. Thank you for listening to the Pause to Go podcast. Special thanks to Codebase Coworking and WTJU Radio for their support. This has been an Awkward Sage production.